Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Greg Baer, the co-author of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids. This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging, relevant, and equitable learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change. On today's episode, I'm talking with Kopono Siadi. He's an educator, he's an author, and he's director of Peak Distinction at What School Could Be. What School Could Be is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing a robust collection of resources for educators interested in innovative practices and placing students at the center of their learning. Kopono, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thanks. It's been a long wait for us to have this conversation, and I'm really excited to be here with you today.
Oh, I'm excited to be in conversation with you. And listeners to this podcast will know the name What School Could Be because we've featured in a previous podcast your colleague Ted Dintersmith. He's the author of a book entitled What School Could Be, Insights and Inspiration from Teachers Across America. So can you just give us a sense of that book, how it's connected to the work of What School Could Be, about your work as director of Peak Distinction Schools? Make sense of it for us, Kopono.
The genesis of this really started with Ted's production of the film Most Likely to Succeed. If you haven't seen that, definitely check that out. Where education came from, all the way from, you know, Horace Mann's trip to Prussia, bringing this idea of grade levels and disciplines to the American industrial, you know, military construct that we have here. In its time, a new innovation of this schooling, this grid of schooling, that actually was really helpful to help kids graduate into their world, which was, you know, their present and their future. From producing that film, took some time off and went around the United States with the goal of finding out what works. And I think that's what's really attracted people to the movement, is that there are things working. There are bright spots. There are amazing educators that I get to talk to every day who are doing great things in the classroom. And that's what's highlighted in that book. You know, What School Could Be is a community. It's a podcast. It is a newsletter. It's a blog post. And what we've been building is the Peak Distinction.
So Kopono, before we dig more into Peak Distinction, let's just talk about our schools generally. So what does matter most in our schools and for our kids?
I think I have two answers for that. I think I have maybe a future-looking answer and then Kopono Siadi, kindergarten student of a social constructivist progressive ed school answer. I think the future-looking answer is that the Titanic that we're on of public education has hit the iceberg. I think the tip of the iceberg has been AI. I think people are really aware that this is changing education. I don't think that AI is the majority of the iceberg. It certainly is a tip that I think has breached the hull. But, you know, it's floating on social change, social unrest, social injustice. It's floating on environmental climate change and climate justice issues. It's floating on a lot of negative political discourse and the dysfunction of the world that we live in right now. I get to, as, you know, in the luxury of my position right now, sit through demos and calls and sharing of products coming out. And I will tell you, I'm fascinated and terrified of what's coming out and what schools and superintendents and principals are being marketed right now that is potentially plugging kids into a new matrix of subscription software. And if I were to quote a good friend of mine, Ross Wenner from World Leadership School, I truly believe, as he does, and this is his quote, education is humans teaching humans to be human. Today, with the help of technology. And so, in the forward-thinking part of this is schools need to prepare kids for their future, 2050, not 1950, and schools are not there. They're not. You know, really quickly and briefly and crisply, Kopono, kindergarten student, I had the good fortune, the blessing of attending a progressive ed, social constructivist, happiest place on earth school where I was the main character of my education. I didn't have to be an extra in the film that was my fourth grade teacher's film or my sixth grade teacher's film. And that idea of protagonism is the core of what I'm thinking about these days as far as what schools need, what they are now, and where they need to evolve.
Gopona, I was lucky like that too. I was at an event recently and the speaker said, how many of you loved school when you were a kid? And I was the only one that raised my hand. And at first I was embarrassed. I'm like, why am I the only one raising my hand? And then I thought about it, how lucky I was. I didn't at the time use the words that you just used, but I was the protagonist. I was in a place where I felt loved. I was surrounded by extraordinary teachers who were loving what they were doing, loving it right in front of us, teachers who looped with us. They knew our stories. They knew our families. They knew our communities. They brought their full selves as humans, teaching humans how to be human. And I loved it. I was a lucky kid in America. But not all kids are lucky like you and I were. So you're working with Peak Distinction to help schools and school systems think about how they turn away from that iceberg that you described or navigate through the, you know, the field of icebergs. So tell us more about Peak Distinction and what it means for our schools.
What we've developed is an assessment protocol, a self-reflection protocol. We developed it not to be psychometrically validated, a score where the numbers determine your future. We developed a school reflection tool, self-reflection and continuous growth tool, where we're able to help school communities ask their student body, their parent body, their faculty and staff body, their leadership body, reflect on seven areas. The five playlists of what school could be: mobilizing your community, students driving their own learning, bringing the real world into school and kids into the real world, finding and elevating evidence of deeper learning and breaking out of the standardized testing regime, creating a caring and connected community. We've added to that being ready to lead the change, both from a senior leadership, school leadership model, but also a distributive teacher leadership model. How ready are we for that? And then the seventh area that we reflect on is being future ready. Certainly a chunk of that is, you know, AI and technology, but it's way more than that, as I've said earlier. So we facilitate this reflection. We provide a report looking at their own reflection, where their strengths are, where their growth is. So from this report that we're able to produce, we're able to provide Peak Distinction professional learning, micro-credentials, sprints, and things like that, and also provide schools links to our, you know, partner, trusted partner organizations, nonprofits who are doing really good school help. And Greg, you know me, I'm not all about medals and awards and these types of distinction things. But what we found is that there's so much out there where schools that want to transform feel constrained by the standard regime, the, you know, supermarket tabloid that's rating schools, the top 100 schools in your district by, you know, these really traditional metrics. And what we've heard over and over again is schools asking for other ways to measure themselves. So we're allowing schools, we're giving schools this tool to commit to continued growth and to have a third party come in and confer distinction, confer different levels of growth in creating schools and learning environments where students are really growing and learning in these areas that Remake Learning and Peak Distinction believes they should be growing in.
So having heard you describe that, Gopona, whether it's that amazing school that you attended in Honolulu or somewhere today where kids are enrolled in classrooms and really experiencing what you described in terms of the seven areas of focus for schools thinking about future-driven learning, is there a place to which you can point to say, ah, this is a lighthouse for us as we think about what's possible in the field of education?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's lots of schools that I see doing things. I think all of my best exemplars of this, interestingly, I think are teachers who are doing these things in schools that have allowed teachers to really reach kids. There are some schools, I'll call out, you know, two schools that I know in Hawaii, three schools in Hawaii, that's where I live. SEEKS, the School for Examining Essential Questions Sustainability, middle school kids changing laws through their project-based, problem-based, inquiry-based investigations of sustainability. Malama Honua Public Charter School, kindergarten through eighth grade kids grounding themselves in ancient Hawaiian cultural knowledge and transforming themselves as individuals and their communities through concept and community and culture-based practices. And the school I got to go to, Hanaho'oli, that's committed to social constructivist kids exploring the world and bringing into being something that wasn't there before. We've worked with schools across the United States. One Stone in Idaho is certainly doing some really cool stuff. If you haven't seen One Stone, I'd encourage people to look at that as a pinnacle of student agency and protagonism. And I was just able to visit Embark in Boulder, Colorado, a micro middle school charter school where kids are running their own coffee shop and used to run their own bike shop and have transformed their bike shop into a whole other business. The best examples that I'm seeing are grounded in their place, in their community, in their culture, and are from and for the communities in which the schools are coming from, versus a cookie cutter model that's, you know, did well somewhere and we're going to try to replicate it somewhere else.
This is Greg Baer. I'm talking with Capone Ciotti, educator, author, and learning innovator. Capone, I just asked you about examples to which we might look as we think about learning innovations in our schools, and you gave me some great examples from an American domestic context. And I'm also mindful that you've had this incredible career in the international education sector. It's also true that you've been in Senegal and in Egypt. I'm curious, are there educational innovations that you've seen take root in places abroad that should stir our imagination as we think about what's possible in American public education?
So interestingly, I was just talking to a new educational friend of mine who knew somebody from 15 years in the past, and the two of them had gone to Finland together when Finland was just emerging as an educational model. The point I had earlier, which is that these takeaways need to be examined and contextualized. That the Finland takeaway that we were talking about is that in Finland, regardless of all these other play-based things, teachers don't start teaching until they have a master's, and they don't get their master's in teaching, they get it in learning, and teachers are set up as professionals. So I am very fascinated about that takeaway from Finland. I haven't worked in Finland, but that's one of the things I'm most excited about. I have had the great privilege of leading up the American International School here in Egypt, and also, like you said, working in Dakar, Senegal, and doing professional learning for schools across the globe and 4+ continents. There are some really cool things going on. Graded School in Brazil really dedicated themselves to a teacher professional learning lab where the school supports teachers researching and innovating. If I were to summarize what they're doing, they've set up a physical space, a cultural permission for teachers to research, experiment, take data, try, and then share. And it's really paying dividends. There's an international school in Frankfurt and another international school we've worked with that has asked the school to make room for student entrepreneurs. And these students are leading the way in creating businesses and social entrepreneurial ventures.
Capone, you've just given me and all of our listeners a lot to Google there, examples from around the world. Thank you for that. Another thing to Google is your book. In 2022, you and Jennifer Klein published a book entitled The Landscape Model of Learning, Designing Student-Centered Experiences for Cognitive and Cultural Inclusion. I love your use of the word landscape. We talk often here at Remake Learning about learning ecosystems. Sometimes I think it's so much easier to talk about it as a landscape, that as teachers, as parents, as learners themselves can look out and see a place and see all the places where we might learn, how we might learn, with whom we might learn. Tell us a little bit about the landscape model and about your book, please.
So, you know, I think the landscape model jives so well with Remake Learning. Personally, I'm a gigantic Remake Learning fan with School Could Be, Peak Distinction. We're all humongous fans and supporters of what you're doing at Remake Learning. The landscape model is exactly that. We're looking at an ecosystem. The book is founded on a metaphor change. I oftentimes feel like the start of school, August, September, whatever it is, the principal waves a checkered flag and kids are off. You know, they're F1 racing cars, they're going around this racetrack, 9 months around and we see where they finish and we give them a score, who wins, who loses, who's in pit row. And I always say this, if that was true, if that's how learning really was, it would be a nice metaphor. But that's not how it is. When we start the school year, and as a teacher being in the classroom for, you know, a decade and a half, you know, first day of school, I got, you know, maybe 2/3 of my kids joining me on the meadow. And, you know, there's a couple kids up there on the hill with a very different perspective, shouting and getting everybody's attention. And there's a few kids who haven't joined us yet. And as we move across this learning landscape, inevitably, you look up as a teacher and you're looking for Johnny or Keikoa or Ahmed or whoever it is, and look back and they're stuck in the metaphorical bog. And you got to make that decision as a teacher. Do I, you know, metaphorically leave most of the class that I'm working with now on this meadow of the learning objective? And how do I go back and run and get the other student? I grab him out of the bog. get to the stream, to forge the stream. And my decision is, you know, do I have the time to spend to teach the kid how to swim across the stream, metaphorically, whatever that skill was that they were stuck on? Or do I put them on my back to quickly join the other kids? Learning is more like an ecosystem. It is more like a landscape. It is dynamic. It's organic. It depends on the kids in the room, the teachers in the room, the place we're at, and so much more, our resources. If we start planning from that metaphor, yes, the planning is harder. Yes, it takes more time to think about learning. But once you get going, it is so much more rewarding. And you've planned for the complexities of learning rather than ignoring them and pretending they're not there. The second element, the horizon, we reference Yang Zhao and his jagged profile, that, you know, the child who should be the next president has a different profile than the child who is going to go to Juilliard, than the child who is going to grow up to be the ethical mechanic I want working on my car, you know, a different profile than the child who's going to go into the clergy or the military, whatever it is. And when filling up the growth areas of students, we should do so without filing down their peaks. And that's the second element, the horizon. And the third element being the pathway, personalized, individualized learning pathways within the social context, because we have ever-growing number of kids in our classes. But how do we, with the reality of having 20, 25, 26 kids in our class, craft individualized pathways? The book is it sets up the philosophical landscape of this, but I'm really proud that in each section we move to tangible do-now strategies for each of these elements. I'm proud of the book. I hope people can check it out as we try to create learning environments that include all students cognitively and culturally in a way where, as we say in the book, all students succeed. Not just giving access to learning, but setting up the conditions for success.
And Kapona, I'm imagining you at a moment at your writing desk as you're collecting your thoughts. Tell us, why are you hopeful? Why are you hopeful about the ability of our educational system to realize the changes you're describing and that our kids want, need, and deserve?
I will not lie that some days I'm less hopeful than others, but I would not have spent 2 years of my life writing that book or have dedicated 30 years of my life to this and be looking forward to the next 30 years if I was not hopeful. And I will tell you why I'm hopeful. Educators are amazing human beings. People called to this profession and who stick with it really do so because of a calling. And every day when I get to go into schools and see students, I see the hope for the future. You look around, you watch the news. I try not to scroll through social media. In fact, after our daughter, who's now 1 year old, was born, I deleted all social media from my phone. So I'm not on social media, but, you know, being news obsessed, it can get really depressing. And you can think about the future being quite depressing. But then you get into classroom with kids and you see what's possible. I was just here visiting the American International School in Egypt, and I went down to Culture Cafe and I saw high school kids leading their peers in culture-grounded arts that were politically active to increase a sense of empathy and grow peace. They initiated it, they led it from themselves, for themselves. And in that moment will power me for the next 10 years.
We've reached the moment in the pod where we finish with a set of lightning round questions. The first things that come to your mind. And are you ready to play?
I'm ready to play. This sounds fun.
All right. What is a school project or experience from your own student journey that sticks with you still today?
I wrote a book about Swimmy the fish and illustrated it in watercolor, and my dad just found it. And I remember very clearly feeling at the moment I did this in first or second grade that I was an author and I was an artist. And when my dad just gave it to me last year, those feelings flooded back, and I was very grateful to my second grade teacher.
I want you to think back to your teaching days. You taught for more than a decade. What was your favorite lesson to teach or favorite unit of study to explore?
Oh, it was one that I couldn't repeat again. The Asian Development Bank was in Hawaii, and I had ninth graders in world history. And we did a critical project on the Asian Development Bank, how it was helping and how it was hurting. And a couple of years ago, another student come back and say, I chose this career because of that project. It was a project I did once as a very naive 20-something-year-old teacher, but for some reason, the relevance of it and them advocating for a point of view stuck with so many kids.
Love that. And you split your time across places ranging from Hawaii to Senegal to Egypt. What's one thing that living in each of these places has taught you?
When I interviewed teachers when I was head of school here, they would ask me, what was Egypt like? And I would tell them, Cairo is crazy, chaotic, loud, disorganized. I'm totally overgeneralizing. There's tons of areas that are not that. And if you can deal with that and love it, you'll like it. Cairo is beautiful, it's clean, it's organized as well, as is everywhere, any city you would go to. But the biggest takeaway is that there are positives and negatives, lessons and celebrations everywhere. And if we allow ourselves to immerse in both the positive, the negatives, the challenges and the celebrations, that's where my true joy has been from everywhere I've lived.
And Kapona, before we go, just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
I am passionate about giving my own kids and my own students a chance to be the protagonist, the main characters of their education. And anytime I can give my own child the agency to succeed, fail, learn from failures on his own and the students that I teach and impact, that opportunity, I give it to them. And I have never been disappointed by taking that risk on kids.
Thanks again to Kapona Siadi, one of the great troublemakers at What School Could Be and co-author of the book, The Landscape Model of Learning. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.